Hello, and welcome to Terry Beckert's GovCom podcast, where we discuss current government contracting trends, compliance matters, and best practices to guide federal contractors forward. I'm Eric Poppe. I'm a senior manager with Terry Beckert in our Government Contract Services Group. And with me today is Ryan Bredell from Ward & Berry. Ryan is a partner at Ward & Berry's leading their government contracting practices. Ryan, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. I'm happy to be here and looking forward to discussing some timely issues.
Yeah, we do appreciate you joining. I know in this current COVID stay-at-home state, we're all trying to adjust. To start off real quick, do you want to say anything about Ward & Berry or your practice before we jump in?
Yeah, of course. Thanks. Yeah, Ward & Berry is a boutique law firm that specializes in providing a full range of legal services, primarily to government contractors. So we can do just about any type of legal work that a government contractor might need. I'm particularly focused on sort of the more traditional government contracts issues, such as the FAR compliance, bid protest claims. And in this this COVID environment, I've been really trying to stay on top of all of the new rules and regulations that are coming out as part of the government's COVID relief package. And so that's what we're going to be focusing on today.
Yeah, it seems like there's guidance trickling out, as we really got into this routine back in mid-March, when the stay-at-home orders were issued and there were base closings and facility closings, everyone was just in the state of wonder of what to do and how will this impact their billing and their contracts with the government. So today, what I was hoping we could talk about is, back in March, mid-March, the CARES Act was issued on March 27th. And since then, again, a lot of information has been coming out. And from there, a class deviation was issued by DOD, talking about being able to potentially bill for individuals that for if you have contracts that you need to continue to stay at a ready, quote unquote, ready state. And then recently, there's been a few checklists that have also dropped on what type of information contractors need to try to submit that claim for reimbursement. Can you give us a quick overview of that class deviation and these checklists that's recently have come out?
Yeah, sure. So, as you mentioned, this all started with the CARES Act. It's being referred to as Section 3610 of the CARES Act. That's seems to be the most common moniker that people are using, because that's the section of the act that provided this particular benefit. But what it is that it allows contractors who have personnel who are somehow mission critical and need to be kept in a ready state, it allows contractors to obtain reimbursement for providing these contractors with paid leave. So let me sort of, set up the scenario. If, let's say a contractor is providing personnel to the government, whether that's, say, for example, security personnel for the intel community, or let's say they're providing some computer IT programmers who are working on a sensitive government requirement. A lot of times, these types of personnel, they're in high demand. If they get furloughed, they will often, go to other jobs, or they won't be available to their employer, the contractor, or to the government. But sometimes, the work that they're doing is really mission critical, and they're unable to do the work because the government facility at which they perform their work is closed because of the coronavirus crisis, or they can't telework. And so in these scenarios, Section 3610 says, all right, you have these critical personnel, they can't work right now, you have to furlough them, but we don't want them to have to do an unpaid furlough because we're afraid that we'll lose them forever if they do that. So what we're going to do is we're going to allow contractors to pay these folks paid leave, and the government is going to reimburse the contractors for providing their personnel with paid leave. So that's really the thrust of this the section 3610. And since it was included in the CARES Act back at the end of March, as you mentioned, Eric, there was the DOD issued a class deviation, which was kind of the beginning of the DOD implementing this act. And then just earlier this week, the DOD put out a series of documents that, you know, we can refer to broadly as implementation guidance that advises contractors and contracting officers on how to go about putting this section 3610 benefit into action.
Well, thank you. And I know one thing to note is the class deviation there gave it gave a time frame, right? Wasn't it January 31st through September 30th of 2020? That's the time frame that this is applicable for.
Yes, that's exactly right. So So basically, the leave that is eligible for reimbursement under Section 3610 has to have been taken between January 31 and September 30th, 2020. And, you know, that's kind of interesting because I think it's going to raise some interesting issues because one of the elements that has to be fulfilled here, in, you know, well, let me take a step back. The first thing to know is this is not a mandatory program. It's really up to the discretion of the contracting officer, yeah, whether the contracting officer makes a determination that the contractor's personnel, that the work that they're performing is mission critical. So it's there's a broad amount of discretion that's provided to the contracting officer here. And you know, what's interesting, I think, is that, you know, with those dates of, you know, it's taken the DOD now 2 months since the CARES Act was passed to issue this guidance. And, you know, that's generally, I mean, that's pretty fast, you know, in the grand scheme of things. I mean, it often takes federal agencies many, many months to issue a rule after Congress passes a statute to issue an implementing rule. So the DOD has worked very quickly here, but it's still taking 2 months. And, you know, this was a very immediate crisis. So we're now in a position of contractors having paid their employees, given them paid leave, and now having to go back to the government saying, hey, we would like reimbursement for this paid leave that we paid our contractors for the last, you know, really almost 3 months or 4 months now. And that's the window in which the contractor can go back. And that's going to present an interesting issue because I think the contractors, they're going to have a hard time, you know, making the argument that their employees were really mission critical if they've been able to be furloughed for all this time and, you know, with no adverse consequences. It's one thing when the crisis is, you know, bearing down on us and, you know, we're saying, oh my gosh, you know, we got to keep these people active. We need to get paid leave reimbursed. But now, you know, now that we're looking backwards, I think that contracting officers might be a little bit more reluctant to make a finding that these employees were all that mission critical. That said, you know, I think that I've been advising my clients all along to just stay in dialogue with their contractors and keep hammering the message of how critical these employees are, and that, you know, we don't want to lose them. And so paid leave reimbursement is important. The other point is, you know, there is 4 more months going forward for this window. And so there's still a lot of time in which this reimbursement can be obtained. And so, you know, if going forward a contractor, you know, is able to make the case that its services are mission critical, then it should do that by, you know, continuing to dialogue with the contracting officer and making the case that it's really important to obtain this paid leave reimbursement.
Yeah, it's crazy, you know, going back to the 2 months thing real quick. Sometimes, you know, sometimes comment periods are 3 months. You know, they're sometimes are longer than, and that's just the proposed rule and get the comments back. Then you know, that back and forth.
Exactly right.
So it's funny how you're saying too. It made me think of the PPP loans, the Payroll Protection Program, and how very beginning a lot of contractors were probably going, wow, we're getting really impacted. All these people are going to need to be at a ready state and be would be eligible underneath this type of solution. And but kind of like PPP, and you're saying the contracting officers being more reluctant, it seems like a lot of government contractors for PPP were going, oh, we think we need the money for payroll protection, but now we haven't really been impacted, so that uncertainty isn't there, and are, you know, we're going back and asking for returning the loans for that forgiveness that forgiveness window. So it really is interesting, and I think that you hit the nail on the head of like, really, you have to prove as a contractor that you have been impacted, that your people are essential to be in that ready state, and really create that narrative and show and prove how it hits, you know, how Section 3610 applies and which facilities have been closed, or really started the contract, right? Like which contracts have been impacted, what facilities, what are the people, and kind of take it through the daisy chain of this is the time they would have incurred, this is their salary, this is where they're putting their time. So you're talking setting up new charge codes, collecting those costs and accumulating those costs, putting together that full package of how to do that down to maybe a task level or delivery order level, depending on the type of agreement that you have. And that impacts a lot of, you know, not just seeking reimbursement, but your cost accounting practices, your indirect rate and estimating practices for next year. But it impacts a lot.
Yeah, it really does. It's, you know, this is going to be, I think, quite a heavy lift for contractors to meet the requirements of this new guidance that DOD put out. You know, the new guidance, you know, they provided a checklist for submission of Section 3610 reimbursement requests. And, you know, it's a pretty hefty package that they're requesting. And so, you know, like I said, it's going to be a heavy lift. As you mentioned, one of the key points or the key asks by the DOD in this checklist for submission is, you know, they're asking for a full-blown narrative that describes the circumstances as to why the contractor believes that it's entitled to reimbursement of paid leave under Section 3610. But let me ask you a question, Eric. I'm curious. You know, I'm the lawyer. We kind of deal with some of these you know, legal issues and creating that narrative. If you were helping a client comply with this this checklist, what do you think would be the most challenging? You know, maybe from a cost accounting perspective or from a numbers perspective, where do you see you spending most of your time with your clients, and what can they do to prepare to submit a package?
So 2 points, actually three. First is just like you said earlier, constant communication with your contracting officer. There is some worry about consistency of your cost accounting practices, especially if you are CAS covered, cost accounting standards covered. You know, CAS 401 and 402, there's some impact there of consistency in how you're applying your cost accounting practices and how you're estimating. If you are CAS covered, you have a disclosure statement that you talk about how you treat your leave and your sick leave and your PTO and such. And is it direct cost, indirect? How do you pull that? So how does 3610 fit into that? And are you still, you know, quote unquote, compliant with your disclosed practices? So having that conversation with the government. The next piece, though, and we've talked about it at Cherry Beckert a few times, is creating the kind of, you can joke that it's the cost narrative or the audible support that you would to submit this claim. It's just that. It's very similar to if you were collecting costs for a bid protest, or not bid protest, sorry, a claim, an REA of some sort, you would segregate off those costs. You would create charge code. You would have ways to identify that and silo that off. You would know what your impact is for indirects, direct cost, and you would be able to create a package that you would submit forward if it was, you know, under normal circumstances, a contract claim or a request for equitable adjustment. Right. I see a lot of those same components that you would use in that situation that you would use here. You would identify the individuals that were impacted, contract of those impacted, individuals impacted. You would identify the amount of eligible hours. You would identify, you know, what their average, their contract rates are. What are the indirects that are impacted? You would apply that in a similar manner and put together a very similar package. Sure. But the biggest thing is fitting that into that narrative that you described, stating how, you know, which labor categories were hit, what are their skill levels, you know, what amount are you actually seeking reimbursement for?
Right.
What are the hour requirements and such as you put that together?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. One thing I would note is that this DOD guidance indicates that when the contractor puts the package together, that this cost, this paid leave reimbursement cost, will all be put as a fixed price separate line item under the contract. So I think you're right. It seems that the guidance is indicating that contractors should really, you know, silo these costs, create a new charge code for the paid leave that they're hoping to get reimbursed, so that it's easily trackable and can be segregated into a single fixed price line item.
I also found it interesting and not surprised that there is a section that states very specifically that Truth in Negotiations Act, TINA, does apply, and there is a requirement for certified cost and pricing depending on your contract type. So they are hitting that home. And there is a section, too, that talks about payroll protection program and have you apply for relief under that program as well.
Yeah, no, two really good points. I'll address the second one first, and this is critical, which is that a contractor cannot get reimbursement for paid leave if that paid leave was also covered by the PPP or any other program in which the contractor was able to obtain reimbursement for these folks that it had paid leave. So, you know, it's very clear, no double dipping. I think Section 3610 is sort of the last resort. You know, it's, if your company wasn't eligible for a PPP loan, otherwise, you know, the PPP loan couldn't cover these particular employees. If there's no other program that provides the contractor with cash to cover these employees, then as a last resort, you can use Section 3610 to obtain reimbursement for their paid leave. And that's a really important point. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, it's definitely a juggling act. And, you know, as we kind of wrap things up, the communication with the contracting officer is huge. Having a open dialogue the entire time, making sure you're on the same page, because that's really the one making the decision in the end. Hitting the requirements in this checklist. Do you have any closing thoughts on 3610, this checklist that has come out? Any closing thoughts?
Yeah, sure. Well, one thing I didn't get to talk about is, you know, we've been talking about this DOD checklist. I don't want to give the misimpression that 3610 only applies to the DOD. It's a government-wide provision. So if you're doing work for any agency, you're potentially eligible for Section 3610. But the DOD, given its mission, kind of took the lead in drafting this guidance for itself. The DOD, I think, is most likely to have the type of work and the type of contractor personnel who are going to be really mission critical. But, you know, there are plenty of other agencies, the State Department, the various intelligence community agencies,
Department of Energy.
Yeah, Department of Energy, I was going to say. Really, any agency potentially could have work being performed by contractor personnel that would fall under Section 3610. And so, you know, it remains to be seen. Presumably, these other agencies are going to follow the DoD's lead and use the DoD's guidance, but they don't have to. And so the bottom line is that this is a very fast moving, fluid situation. The regulations are, you know, constantly in flux. This DoD guidance came out on Monday, and just this morning, in concert with some colleagues at the American Bar Association, we submitted a bunch of suggested changes and recommendations for this guidance. So it's likely to change in the very near future and will continue to change. So very important that you stay up on this fast moving area of the law and obtain the necessary advice to ensure that you're compliant.
Yeah, well, thank you. And to everyone that is listening in, if Warden Barry has been putting out a lot of information on, you know, current new proposed rules, regulations, additional guidance on responding to the, you know, COVID situation. Same with Cherry Beckert from the accounting side. So if you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to Ryan at Warden Barry or myself at Cherry Beckert. And on that note, Ryan, thank you very much for joining me today on Cherry Beckert's GovCon podcast, and appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed it, and I look forward to doing it again soon.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.